All right. Good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing a local podcast. Good morning. It is May 30th, 2023. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. The day after, right? We got a shitload of rain yesterday. Wow. Yeah, just when you thought it was over, more rain came. So we got our dose of rain for the week. Thank you. I'm sure we needed it. Appreciate it. But today is the day after, and usually what's left is like a lot of wind and, yeah, just drying out. So right on schedule, we are windy and drying out today, which is fine. It's warm. It's all good. It is Tuesday, big work day here at the salon. Here we go. Let's get into it, right? First client, right, was a client that I did last week, right? And I must have not removed them off. They must have reached out and said, hey, can I move up? I moved them up, and then I forgot to take them off of the calendar for the day. So there's a big gaping hole in my book this morning. I'm sure at the time, I'm like, I'll just leave it on there. I'm sure I'll need a break, right? Sometimes I'll do that. I'm like, I'll probably need a break, so I'm just going to leave it on there. I'll probably be grateful the day that it happens. Come today, and it's on there, and I'm like, God damn it, Tom, why didn't you take that off? So that's how my week's starting, a big gaping hole in the beginning of the day. But it is fine because I do want to do this podcast, and I do have a couple of things that I need to figure out, one of them being my bill pay on my computer. This is just dumb shit that comes along when you get sober, right? These are all these things that I have not handled in my life, right? I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, relying on my parents to, you know, can you get me something to eat? Can you get me something to drink? Can you turn this on, turn this off, do this, do that? I can remember as a kid being like that, but as adult, I actually remember that too. And it's pretty pathetic because I look back now and I'm sort of ashamed, right? So what I'm doing today is dealing with normal shit, right? It takes a lot of work to be normal. A lot of work to be normal, which is good, right? I think we are in a place right now where any work seems awesome, right? If you do anything, it seems like we're in this sort of place where we all, or a portion of us, if it's not you, that's fine. Other people, including myself at times, but want to be praised for doing normal shit, right? I came to work, right? Good for you, right? I paid my bills. Good for you. And it is, right? I remember there was a period in my life, I was trying to figure out what music I wanted to play, and there's a song by Social Distortion called Highway 101. I used to live on the 101. I lived in San Diego in a small town called Encinitas, right on the 1, right? Right where, you know, in this song, you hear all the stuff that he talks about. I remember all that stuff going on in that time of my life in that area along the 1. And, you know, California was a real changing point for me in my life, in my addiction, in my sobriety, or not, lack of sobriety, really. But California really is where it all sort of got crazy. And, I'm grateful I got out of there with the least amount of damage as possible, right? You know, when I was out in San Diego, I was definitely under the influence of some ups, drinking some downs, and doing everything in the middle in between because it was a free-for-all out there. It was like freaking gluttony 2.0. I mean, all I did, I barely could keep a job. But then eventually, I got into doing drugs, right, and started selling them. Like every entrepreneur, every capitalist, I saw an opportunity to take what I was doing and turn it and flip it and sell it and do what I wanted to do for free and maybe even make a little bit of money. And, it seemed like absolutely the thing to do, right? And that's what I did. And then I did it for a while. But it's funny when you live out, it happens everywhere. But at least out in San Diego, you could see the conveyor belt of people, right? With the conveyor belt of future and past capitalists, because that's what the system was out there. You know, I wasn't the first person to figure out if I bought a little extra and sold a little extra that I could do a little extra for free or whatever. And so that would be the system. And it seemed like all of my friends had either in jail, were on probation, were waiting to go to court, or hadn't gotten caught yet, right? And so that's the grind, right? Because when someone gets caught, everybody that hasn't been caught worries about what the person that got caught is going to say. Once you get into the jail, then you're in the probation. Now you're a fourth waiver. You can't hang out with these people because that means the cops have a opportunity to come into your house. And you should, I don't know if anybody knows this, but if you associate with people that are on probation, they're probably fourth waivers, which means that if they're in your house, the cops can come into your house and check them. Check them and your house if they're in it. Just a little, you know, hopefully we're past that, right? Hopefully we are past that nonsense. But the fact is that it's very true. And so it's everybody in the same process. I remember me and a couple of friends went up to Camp West Fork, right? Camp West Fork was a probation camp up in Big Bear Mountains. We went to go visit a friend of mine, right? And we went up there and we all sat outside in the grass and chatted and had lunch. But this would be one day a place that I would eventually visit, right? Because it's this constant cycle of shit. And that would be, I actually ended up going to Camp West Fork at the end. I got to, you know, eventually, you know, the grind goes through everybody, right? And then one day there was a knock on my door. Who is it? It's the cops kicking in my door, getting arrested. Now I'm in the grind, right? Now I'm waiting to go to court. I mean, and the worst part about all of it is that I was, alcohol is tough, right? Alcohol is tough, but drugs, oh my God, they're harder. And especially ups, especially amphetamines, especially because, you know, I mean, unfortunately, we had a lot of fun, right? It was really hard to see the bad side of what was going on. Once the, you know, I kind of worked my way through the process, I could clearly see the bad side, but I can tell you, it had me then. I couldn't quit. It was on, and I remember we went to go visit my buddy up at Camp West Fork. I had not been arrested yet. I had not been caught yet. I was still, you know, flirting around with, you know, selling and doing and yada, yada, yada. But I remember we went up there. I was probably high. We were probably all high and had to get searched, right, and somehow got in. And we went and visited my buddy, and we hung out. And then, you know, months later, somebody else would get busted, right? And I remember when I got busted, they took me in to a, so I don't know. Someone asked me if I would share this story, and I thought I had, but I guess I will. You know, I was nobody, right? I was a nobody doing nothing. I was just hanging out, bouncing along the bottom, right? Figured out I could sell a little speed and make a little, you know, it wasn't my goal to be a drug dealer, right? It was just, I thought, the clearest path for a guy like me. And, but yeah, and one day, you know, I get that knock on the door. And I look out the door, and it's this guy with a clipboard, and he's very innocent looking. I open the door, and he says, he asked me if are you so-and-so? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, we have, and then all of a sudden, he just pushed his way in, followed by a bunch of cops. And next thing you know, I am handcuffed and on the floor. And the crazy thing about that is it was probably a year or two prior that one day I was sitting in my apartment and I heard all this banging and I looked out that door down the hall and the cops were kicking in another neighbor's door and they saw me, came over and they're like completely harassed me, right? You got any cocaine? I'm like, no, I have no cocaine. He goes, you got cocaine? I go, I have no cocaine. He goes, we're going to search your house or we're going to get a search warrant. I'm like, and he goes, if we find something, we'll just throw it away. We'll let you go. But as long as it's not cocaine, I go, I have no cocaine. Came in my house, found drugs, found weed, found bongs, found everything, but no cocaine. And they threw it all or took it all. Right. And, but those guys I would be meeting a couple years later down the road. And they came in and the problem I had was, is that the guy that I was getting all my stuff from was like big time. He was big time. And when they took me into that room, right, and they said, you want to help us out? And I said, I do not, because I was afraid. And you know what? I think they only caught me with a couple grams. It wasn't like the end of the world. It seemed like the end of the world at the time, and that's perfectly good because that's what it needed to feel like, the end of the world. But I can tell you, I got high before court, right? That disease had me. This, you think being possessed by the devil when you're on alcohol is bad. You should never try being possessed by the devil when you're under the influence of that other stuff, because that monkey is fucking hard to kick. And I would say to myself every day, I'm not going to get high. And every day I would get high, right? Every single day. If I wasn't getting high, I was sleeping. And I remember I had to go to court. Got high, right? I went to court high. I was such a mess, right? I was so, and this is why, you know, I talk about sometimes in the past about how it's like being possessed by a devil. I literally felt like I was possessed by a devil. It was a different guy, the way I dressed, I tucked in my shirt. It was just, I was just a completely different person, right? I must have been. How could I have thought that going to court high would be even an option, right? It's terrible, but that's what I did. And, you know, it was really bad. And going to court high, everything I did high. Even the whole process of getting to the sentencing, right? I was like, I got to go to sentencing. I can't get high. Got high. I just couldn't. The devil had me bad and got sentenced, right? And I got sentenced to work release, which was a probation work release program. And I was so arrogant. I was so possessed that I thought that I will be able to go to work release and then I will be able to get high and then come back and act like I never did. Yes, a fucking great song. Social Distortion, man, they are the shit. And yeah, I was down there with the rest of them. Absolutely, I was in the pit. And I look back at those days and I'm like shocked, right? I cannot believe it. The world that I lived in when I was in San Diego, North County, is like no other world, especially when you're under the influence of amphetamines. It was crazy. Crazy. I mean, we lived by the night. You know, we didn't travel by day. We traveled by night, and we hung out in bars and alleys and trash cans and just insane. And, you know, it was weird because I had somehow picked a path in the route that I was taking that I sort of did okay, except for the fact that I was doing amphetamines and it was illegal, right? I for some reason, I never lost my teeth. I just seemed to just sort of have fun, right? We just sort of had a lot of fun, right? But there were people in my life that would get completely physically and emotionally wrecked, spiritually destroyed by these drugs, man. They lose all their teeth, they're scabby, into trash cans, dumpster diving, just, oh, it was really, it was a shame. It was absolutely a shame. There was a girl that I knew that was deep into it. She lost all her hair. I was like, oh my God, beautiful girl, right? All your hair falls out. So it was a bad, alcohol never took me to that place, right? At this point in my career of living and experiencing shit, I was using alcohol. We got drunk a lot. Probably drank every day, but we were also using amphetamines every day. So it was almost like a tool to sort of balance me, right? To try to keep me coming down, you know, or if we drank too much, try to get me sober up. I was always under the influence of something, right? Up or down, up or down. And it was just a really tough time in my life. At the same time, having an amazing time, right? Really hard to both sides. I wouldn't do it again. Not sure I'd change anything. Wouldn't do it again. Not sure I'd change anything. But whatever. It's part of the past. It's definitely part of the past. But what ended up happening, though, and I'm so grateful for this, and I shared this before, I was sentenced to 101 days in a work release program, arrived in work release and was notified that I would not be staying there. I'd be going to a probation camp in the mountains, Camp West Fork. And off I went, crying, having a hissy fit, right? Because I was like, hey, I'm going to go to work release. This is how possessed I was. I'll go to work release. I'll just get high, right? They won't even know. They absolutely would know. They absolutely knew. They absolutely picked me out. They knew what I was up to, and they sent me off to this camp. And I got sober somehow, right? I refrained from alcohol. I was sober. The definition of alcohol of sober is to refrain from alcohol. I was sober in Camp West Fork. And I was saying, yes, I'm done. I've had enough. It's over. My drug and drinking career is over. Thank you, San Diego, for giving me the opportunity to go to jail and get off this shit. And, I went to a lot of meetings. You know, I've shared over these past however many podcasts I've done, you know, the gentleman that used to bring a meeting into Camp West Fork, Big Bear, California. I don't know. I feel like they drove a couple hours at least, right? I think at one point I might have said 4 hours. I'm not sure it was four, maybe two and a half, three. A big chunk of time. And they would bring a meeting in 3 nights a week, and then a couple other people would bring meetings in. And, you know, I've been on both sides, right? I've been in jail going to meetings, and I've also been sober taking meetings into jail. I've sort of, I've been on both sides. So I just remember going to that meeting and just being like, I didn't care, right? I'd like to think that I did. I did not care about getting sober. What I cared about was getting these things called chronos, and there were these little blue pieces of paper. And I would get my chrono, and I would keep them in my envelope, right? And I would keep it all together. My buddy Billy's like, hey, keep all that stuff when you go to court, because we're all, right? We're all appealing, right? We're all appealing our sentencing. So I had a court date to go to, and when you go to your court date, then you can talk about having your sentence reduced. And when you do this, you bring in all your chronos, right? All your paperwork. And I see this all the time in meetings. And I guess it's just a process. Hey, man, it's your journey. But, you know, we're pretty much onto it. They're pretty much onto it. And I remember taking my sack of chronos, because I went to a meeting every night, right? I'm better. And I went before the judge and showed him all my stuff, and he's like, yeah, I don't think 101 days is going to hurt you, buddy. Continue. And I was like, what? Crushed again, right? Devastated. But, you know, I wouldn't see it at the time, but in the end, it was the thing that I needed to do, was just dry out a bit. And but I'm like, I am done. I'm sober. I'm going to be sober. I'm going to meetings, talk to people in the program, change my life. And 101 days came and went, and I remember I got out and released, and I got high that day, right? It was that day I got high. It was that bad. I had not even a fucking chance to stay sober, and I was off to the races again. And at this point, you know, my parents had left California. They'd headed to Delaware. We had had a plan. You're going to be, as soon as you get out, get the U-Haul. My dad paid for a U-Haul, paid for a trailer, get the U-Haul, get your house packed, load it up, and get the fuck out of San Diego. And I was like, I got this, Dad. I'm going to be better, right? High the first day, and the shit would get going right up again. And my dad's like, get that trailer packed and get out of California. And somehow I did it, man. Somehow we got it packed and loaded. And off to the east we went. And 5 days across the United States doing more speed, right? Got stuck in Tennessee. Got stuck in where did we get stuck in? Tennessee, I think, because we couldn't make it, ran out of speed. And a friend of mine had to FedEx us some speed across the United States, and got the last bit of our energy and finally got all the way across. And I got here, I was probably about 105, 105 pounds, just skinny little frail, thin, pale guy, right? Just a shell of myself. And, you know, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. The only reason I think that I am free from drugs and alcohol is because the drugs didn't exist here in Delaware at that time. This was 1994, October 4th, 1994 was when we arrived into Delaware, and speed wasn't here then. Right. There might have been some coke, some crack. I know some people were smoking some crack, but there was no meth, no amphetamines, no ups. And so I focused all of that energy, right? All of that addiction, all of that possession, all of that negativeness into vodka. And that would be the beginning of the end for Tom and this trail of destruction, because I became a serious drinker, right? Nasty, gnarly, gluttonous. You know, I moved here 105. I probably got up to about 195. I probably put on 90 pounds, right? Eating chicken wings, eating chips. I mean, you know, granted, I'd been in San Diego. I didn't eat food over there. I just, you know, drank and did drugs. And so I wore like 28. You know, my pants were real. In my mind, I looked the best I've ever looked in San Diego. But, you know, I was very unhealthy. Put on a bunch of weight. Just really gross. And became very gluttonous and eating and lack of exercise and just an addiction that I could not shake. And I put all of that energy into drinking. And, you know, I'd never been that much of a drinker, at least at that level. This was even new for me. But I just sort of settled into every addiction that I do. So, you know, I did it for a while. But if those drugs had been here, I probably, you know. And the other thing that was funny is that when I left San Diego, they said, all right, you need to go in, check in, because I was going to be on probation, right? I was out of jail, put me on probation. That's the end, right? When you get put on probation, because then you're in the system, right? It's terrible. I feel bad for these people that get stuck in these systems. I mean, I know we play a part in it, but fuck, if you do your time, just fucking let people go. Jesus. But they put them into the system, and then, and when I was released, they said, you need to go to, when you get to where you're at, right, you need to check in with your local police department and let them know that you're in town. I was like, oh, sure, that sounds fine. You know, got to the town, we move in, went to the police department. I'm like, I'm here. Guy's like, who are you? And I go, oh, yeah, I was just in San Diego. I moved here, and they said I needed to check in with the police department. He go, all right, thanks. I think what I was supposed to do was go to Georgetown, which I never did. But it seems like everything's fine. I think they didn't think I got lost in transition. But yeah, you know, I got lucky, right? I got lucky. One, there was no drugs here. Two, I didn't have to get on probation. And then three, you know, March 31st, 1997, I found this program. I found a program. And I was at the bottom. I was an ex-drug drug user, drug dealer, alcoholic, you name it, I've probably taken it. I never was big into like the downs, right? I was always the ups guy, so never got into heroin. But you know, I've snorted it, right? I've tried it. I've done everything, right? I've tried it all, right? There was a human trash can. And so to be sitting here today on April, May 30th, 2023, alive, sober, with time. You know, with time. And, you know, I went to the meeting last night, just as I suspected. It was on the fifth step. Really, really great meeting. Great guy spoke. You know, and it's that, like my buddy used to say, this is the point where I decide, right? My buddy Matt used to say, you decide how fucking sober you want to be. You decide how happy you want to be. This is it, because everything in the fifth step is really about how far do I want to dig in? How much do I want to clean up? Right, the fourth step, doing that moral inventory. How deep do I want to go?
You got to go deep.
Right? You got to get all those things in the corner. I've done it a couple times prior to this. I didn't get into the basement, right? I just, you know, I maybe went into the basement, but I didn't go into that second basement room, right? I didn't really go into the corners. And I suffered for it. I said in the meeting last night, a person could probably get sober and stay sober on the first three steps, right? Admitting we're powerless over alcohol, trying to build a relationship with a higher power, our will and our lives over the care of a higher power. Someone could probably, I mean, I've stayed sober for a while just on that. Even though I thought that I had done the steps, I really, later on I would learn I could do a little better, right? But I said last night, this is where, you know, we're building the army, right? This is where we're digging in. We're building the army for when the disease or addiction comes knocking on the door again. And we want to be prepared. It will. If you're not, it will get you. I'm just saying it. And that's for me. And it's for you, too. If we do not build this army in preparation for when that disease comes to knocking, it'll get us. And that's exactly what happened to me in Easton. You know, I look at it today and I see it clear as day, right? I'd been in a program here, moved over to Easton. All of a sudden, I didn't like the way they collected the money. Bam, I'm drinking in a week. It was that freaking easy. I'd let go of the hand of God and I'd open up the opportunity for this devil to come back in. It's not going to happen today. You know, I've done this four step. I've done the fifth step. I've done the sixth step. I've done the seventh step. I've done the eighth step. And I've done the ninth step. And the tenth step allows me to clean up any problems that I have in this time, in this day when I need to. Meditation. And then I'm here for the next alcoholic, right? I'm here for the next alcoholic forever. And I'm grateful because, God damn it, I was in a bad deal. I was in a bad situation. I wasn't getting out. And, you know, one of the coolest things about my life is that my mother and father have stuck by my side forever. Forever they've been sticking by my side. And I'm so grateful for them because I'm not sure if I was in their shoes, I would have done the same. And but they've always stuck by me. If they hadn't moved us out to Delaware, I don't know where I'd be. I'd probably be dead or in jail, right? Jail, institutions, or death. So listen, if you want to get sober and you feel like you're in the bottom, we've all been there, right? I've seen the bottom. It's not good, right? I know one thing, though. There is lower, right? There is lower, but I don't need to find that out today. But if you feel like there's no chance you can get sober, man, one day at a time, right? Like I told that guy that asked me if I'd be a sponsor. I said, I don't care about any of your stories. Stay in the day. Don't drink. And go to a lot of meetings, and we'll talk about it later. Listen, hey, have a great day. Appreciate the chat. Thanks for letting me share. Bye-bye.